Well, a man named Rumi, who lived more than 700 years ago, is still one of the best-selling poets in the U.S., if you can believe it. Rumi's writings of love, friendship, and the joys of life has sold more than a 500,000 copies. Now a conversation with Coleman Barks. He's a professor emeritus of English at the University of Georgia. His book, The Essential Rumi, has sold over a 500,000 copies. Coleman Barks is in Kansas City for the Festival of Face, performing This Day I Cannot See, an evening of Rumi's poetry tonight at 7 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. There's a ticket charge. Coleman Barks, so good to have you. Welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you.
For our guests who may not know, who in the world was Rumi? Who was that guy?
A 13th century mystic.
Yeah.
Who was born in what is now Afghanistan. And he moved from there to Konya, what is now Konya, Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, eight centuries ago, was the head of a dervish learning community.
What does that mean, a dervish learning community?
Well, the work of that community was to open the heart and to try to seek out and say the truth and to celebrate the glory and the indignity of being in a human incarnation.
And so we're still talking about Rumi. We're having this conversation today, 700 years later, because...
Well, he has loved all of the world, and he's known as the one in the history of religions that blurs all the boundaries.
Huh.
You know, all of the Jews and Christians and Muslims and Hindus and Buddhists came to his funeral, and they said, "Why are you coming to his funeral?" And he said, they said, "He deepens us wherever we are."
So, wow. So everybody can connect with the guy, is what you're saying.
That's right. Yes.
What an extraordinary gift.
I know it.
Yeah. Most of Rumi's poems were recited in something called a state of ecstaticism, if I'm saying that right.
Uh-huh.
What does that mean? Because I think I want to go there sometime soon.
Well,
it sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, you might be there right now. my sense of that is a lot of different modalities in Rumi's poetry. But he said just being in a body and sentient, conscious, was a cause for rapture.
Hmm.
And lots of children know that.
Yeah, and we tend to forget that as we get older.
It's true. Yeah, we get cynical or something. Yeah, but we can be reminded. And there are ecstatic poets who remind us of this, you know, like Whitman and Emily Dickinson and Rilke and lots of others, Neruda. Yeah.
Do we have indications that they all read Rumi as well?
No, let's see. Whitman wouldn't have, no, they would not have had a translation.
They weren't around back then.
Well, they were around.
Because you weren't around back then.
Well, that's right.
That's part of the reason.
Yeah. So he was known all over the Middle East and the Far East. But only up until this century, he began to be known and have translators into French and English and other languages, too.
Why was it, Coleman, that he began to become better known in this century or last century? What was happening that brought him back to the fore?
That's interesting. Robert Bly thinks... It goes back to the Council of Nicaea in 326, where all the ecstatic material from the New Testament, Jesus is dancing and all, was expunged. And so that dimension of Christianity was taken out. And so he thinks that Rumi is adding that, putting that back in to the Western civilization.
Was there any one person or poet who's sort of seen as responsible for sort of rejuvenating the image of Rumi even in the last few decades?
Well, there are two Cambridge Islamicists, who A.J. Arbery and Reynold Nicholson. But I would have to say that It's my translation. See, you said a half a million. Actually, it's 2 million.
Well, excuse me.
Yes, right.
Good for you.
Yeah, right. It's a total phenomenon in the publishing world. Nobody knows what's happening, you know.
But, and they're still selling today.
Yeah. I figured out that Rumi's books sell 100 a day all over the world. And my books of my own poetry sell 12 a month.
So you have a ways to go.
We all do.
It's
humbling to be in the company of this guy. Yeah.
Well, you brought some of his poetry with you, I think.
I did, yeah.
Do you want to recite one for us? We can all get a flavor for what he's all about.
Okay, a short one. But this is about the sky. And you can't see the sky here today, but this is about those Kansas skies that are vast and empty. Autumn will bring a sky so vast and empty that something entirely fresh will begin to grow next spring. I think that's about the internal world.
That's nice.
Something vast and empty comes into your being, and that over time will allow something new and creative to come up after winter passes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about one more?
One more.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do that. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about ideas, language. Even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. But he's out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right. I think he's saying out beyond the mind, out beyond the judgmental mind, there is a field. Let's meet there. And the Iranian community in the United States took out a full-page ad in the New York Times and put just that sentence on it. Yeah. And, you know, he's a Persian-speaking poet, so they claim him in Iran, you know.
You know, you were first introduced to Rumi back in the 1970s. What's the story behind that, Coleman? How did you get started on that journey?
Well, there's three different strands of that, but mainly the most believable.
Well, you were there. You should know.
No, I was. But is the one that the poet Robert Bly introduced me to. And he gave me, this is in June of 1976, he gave me a copy of scholarly translations. He said, Coleman, these poems need to be released from their cages, meaning they need to be taken out of the scholarly translationese, that the mental mindset of the academia, and put into something like the tradition of free verse in this country that is beloved the world over, that began with Whitman.
Well, so how did you know the language even to begin that process?
Well, yeah. I don't know Farsi, but I am given word-for-word English translations by scholars.
Okay.
And I claim to be able to edit those into a valid American poem in English.
How much license do you take with all this?
A lot of freedom.
Yeah, do you?
There's a lot of freedom. But I'm getting closer and closer to the scholarly language. I'm proud of that. But,
meaning that the older you get, you sort of stick more closely to the literal translation?
I try to listen, for what is actually, what spiritual information is coming through the language, and try to give that a new form. Yeah.
That sounds like a great way to spend
a big chunk of your career.
Well,
I've spent about 38 years.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. And I don't get tired of it.
Really?
I may be simple-minded. You know, I'm not sure why I don't get tired of it. But I just go at it fresh every day.
We're visiting with a great scholar here, Coleman Barks, who's in Kansas City tonight at 7 at Unity Temple on the Plaza to talk about the poetry of Rumi. He's a former University of Georgia scholar. His book, The Essential Rumi, has sold more than 2 million copies. He just pointed out to us here. So when you're doing this work, have you been through all of it, all of Rumi's poetry,
or is there still ways to go?
Oh,
there's nobody knows how he did it.
How prolific was he?
Well, he spoke these poems, as part of the work he was doing with the learning community, and he's just spontaneously, and scribes would take them down. So we don't know how he did that. I mean, we don't know how Shakespeare wrote Twelfth Night in 2 weeks either, you know. But Faulkner wrote As I Lay Dying in 6 weeks either. You know, they're geniuses among us,
yeah.
And he was one.
When you do a reading like you are tonight, is that sort of a religious experience for you, for the audience? How would you characterize it?
It's the great critic, I.A. Richards, said that poetry is a house for the soul. And it may be that it's that, you know, that we're building a place where we can be together. And inside this, whatever the mystery of the soul is, you know, it's a place outside of time. And where we all connect in the mystery of friendship. You know.
So what will happen tonight? What are you going to do?
Well, I'm going to say poems, and David Darling is going to play the cello.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because Rumi's music almost always is set to music, right?
It was always, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because?
Well, the music helps the poetry. The words go deeper into the psyche.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If we had music here now, you would see that. You know, the words can find a way into the psyche. Somehow, music is such a matrix for the kind of a substance for the soul to swim in, and the words are more intellectual.
You know, when you're performing, Coleman, you know, what's your state of mind? What's going through you in the midst of one of your presentations?
It varies, you know.
Well, okay.
Good
days, bad days, like
well,
in here.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
But I've been accused of going into a kind of a trance, you know. Michael Stipe, the lead singer of R.E.M., heard me read and said, you go into a trance like Mrs. Patti Smith.
is that right?
Yeah.
Do you?
I sometimes do. And the words just take me there, you know, and I let them take me. So I don't resist it. But also, you know, there are rowdy moments of hilarity, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Read one more poem for us before our time runs out here.
I am so small, I can barely be seen. How can this great love be inside me? Look at your eyes. They are small, but they see enormous things. That's what you call a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he explains the smallness by saying that how the big question, how can this great love be inside me? You know, and he says, it's your eyes can see the night sky. You know, in the same way the night sky can be inside your eyes, so this great love can be inside.
Oh, that's great.
A human being.
Yeah. That's just great. Well, again, Coleman Barks will be speaking this evening at 7 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. Again, his book is The Essential Rumi, selling more than 2 million copies. For tickets, call 913-362-8951, 913-362-8951. And Coleman Barks, what a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, great pleasure.
Thanks for taking some time with us. Really appreciate it. You bet.